Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Narnia Web Council. It's just a couple of us today. Really sad. We miss Jim Fan. We miss Warrior for Jesus. We miss Dr. Alan Ransom. But Gwenpuddle's here. Hello, Gwenpuddle.
What's up?
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. It's also been a while since we had any like real big Don Treader spoilers, I guess. So this is it's fun to be finally getting back into that last stretch of Prince Caspian where it was getting crazy. I think we're just starting to get a taste of that here.
And yeah, before the trailer, there's always a little bit of madness that comes up before the trailer.
Yes, and then the trailer comes out, and which we're supposed to be getting. There's going to be some sneak peek footage on May 1st at Biola. I don't think we'll see it, but that that's
they mentioned a super trailer.
Yeah, it's certainly a signal that the trailer that we're going to see has got to be pretty close.
Yeah. So, and if the super trailer is going to be out May 1st, then maybe we'll see a teaser trailer before then.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just going to be something that they're going to see at Biola, right? I don't think we're going to see that.
Right, but I'm just saying if they're going to show a super trailer at Biola, who knows what they'll show to the public before then. I guess we'll find out.
There should be something with the summer films either way.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Well, podcast is going to largely cover what came out in an article from Christianity Today called Will the Dawn Treader Float? And then we're going to cover just some news that came out a few days ago towards the end. But basically, I'm trying to think of how to summarize this article. They summarized some of the plot because they showed some footage. And so people have actually seen this footage. This isn't just I think this is important to consider, Glenpuddle, because as you and I know, this isn't just a plot detail that was released necessarily. It's something that some people have seen and are commenting on.
Right.
So they're seeing some context about how these things are playing out.
Yeah, but the people we're hearing it from, it's really cool. Like, they call it the largest accountability group. And so the fact that we're seeing it from people who are really, really emotionally invested in these books, including our own Tyrion and from NarniWeb and Paul from NarniFans, it's really cool hearing it from them.
Yeah, and another thing, this reminds me a little more of what the kind of things they were doing outreach-wise with Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I don't remember being so common with Prince Caspian.
Yeah, they did very little of that in Prince Caspian.
Yeah, but Mark Johnson, I thought I'd kind of start off here with a quote from him, just a portion of the article. He says, "We made some mistakes with Prince Caspian, and I don't want to make them again," he said, a producer of all Narnia films. He said, "Caspian lacks some of the wonder and magic of Narnia, was a little bit too rough for families, and too much of a boys' action movie." He said, "It's very important that filmmakers regain that magic for Don Treader, now in the editing stages, and he's convinced they've found it." He says, "I want to climb on the rooftops and say we have a wonderful Narnia movie." That's going to be basically the end of the spoiler section in some ways for this episode, since we're going to be talking about the plots. But I was really encouraged by this. I mean, there's some questions we'll have coming up later, but I mean, were you pretty happy to read this, Glenpuddle?
Well, yes and no. I was happy in that. I agree with the last part of that it's important to regain the magic of *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe* and the Don Treader movie. But I'm not sure how encouraged I am for him to be talking about Prince Caspian as if it was a big mistake. Like, he talks about how it lacked some of the wonder of *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe*, which I absolutely agree with, and I think that was great. I think that's kind of the point of the book, that the magic of *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe* has been driven out by the Telmarines, and now it has to be regained. That's kind of the theme of the story, the sadness of the old days being gone and the hope that they might return. So again, I guess it's good that they're recognizing that the next one has to be different from Prince Caspian, go back to the wardrobe kind of feel. But I mean, I think I'm not sure how encouraged I am that they're saying it's a mistake. And I'm kind of surprised.
To be fair, he says he says some mistakes. He doesn't call a film a mistake.
Right, but like he's definitely saying that they got something fundamentally wrong. Like, he actually says that it was too much of a boys' action film, which I was surprised to hear him say that, because Adamson has called it in interviews. Adamson called it that on many occasions. So here he's basically saying Erinjer Adamson got it wrong. He's using a direct quote from Adamson saying he got that wrong. So I was kind of surprised to hear a producer actually say that.
Well, I think one thing, we've talked about Prince Caspian, but on one hand, yeah, I agree that I think it needed to have a very different feel. I think a lot of them have very different feels. I think that The Horse and His Boy needs to have a drastically different feel from The Magician's Nephew, which needs to have a very different feel from The Last Battle. I think a lot of them have some very unique tones to them, but I think if he's talking about like a little too rough, I didn't feel that way. Although if he's going to talk about it being too much of an action film, the only thing where I would try to make that case is not that the film really had too much action, because it is an exciting, I thought it was an exciting book with battles and such, but I thought that the themes, which I thought were there on the redemption of Narnia, and I think they were there, but they could have been emphasized more. And so if that's what he's talking about, I think you could take it either way. He could say, yeah, we had too much excitement, too much action in it, or he could be saying, we just don't, we didn't emphasize everything properly.
Yeah, well, he says a little bit too rough for families, so I assume he'd be talking about. It really was. Actually, I think it probably could have been PG. It would not have surprised me if it turned out to be PG-13, Prince Caspian.
Yeah.
So I think he's talking more about that. And yeah, but you might be right as well that he's talking about the amount of action and stuff. And again, I disagree that if he's suggesting that was a mistake in Prince Caspian, yeah, I would have liked if they had made the final battle shorter and stuff. But all in all, I think that I feel like if there is one action film, if there's one straight up action story in the Chronicles of Narnia, it's probably Prince Caspian, maybe Last Battle, but it's definitely, if there was going to be one movie in the franchise that was like that, it was Prince Caspian. So, I think that.
You're saying that the magical qualities here, the magical feel has to be a Don Treadbury thing, but you think that Johnson might be mistaking it for a Narnia thing in general?
Maybe. Again, it's just that it's. I guess overall, I should be encouraged. Prince Caspian's done and it's over. So whatever he thinks about Prince Caspian doesn't really matter. Like it's done, it's done. And I guess I should just be encouraged about. Well, he's acknowledging that Don Treader has to be different, and well, I agree with that. So I guess overall, I should be encouraged by that, even if I don't agree with every part of it.
Yeah. Well, let's get to some of the specifics on the plot details. First of all, Kathy Keller was there. She says, she's talking about the ending of the film. She says, "I'm glad the final interaction between Aslan and Lucy was there in its unadulterated entirety, because I consider that the pinnacle of the entire seven books." And they say that the line, which you did an entire video blog on, the line, there, meaning in our world, I have another name. And I thought that was, I mean, I can't help but feel good about that. I mean, it's just one of those things. Yes, I feel really good about it. I mean, not so much, and I think I mentioned this somewhere in my video blog, not so much even for that line alone, but I do think it's an important line. But even more so than that, the fact that it would be something that if you didn't understand more of what was going on, it would be so easy to just gloss over. And I was never really concerned about them saying, you know what, that just sounds too religious. We're going to cut that out. I was never concerned about that, but I was really concerned about, I think that's just really unnecessary. I don't think it's really, people are going to care. I think we could say it differently, or that was what I was afraid of.
Yeah, I think actually a good example of what you're talking about is something that they address later about how that line in Prince Caspian, "Every year you grow, you will find me bigger." In Prince Caspian, that was changed to "Every year you grow, so shall I." Which it's one of those things where they're probably just rewriting it and they thought it was the same and didn't realize it's actually, if you think about it, that's pretty different. Really saying two different things. So I think that's kind of what you're saying now, as far as well, they would probably sort of rewrite it and then think it's coming out the same when actually it's not. They would kind of miss the point of it.
Yeah, so I think that's almost a green light to maybe other things that I'm really going to like in the story, like the undragoning. I'm not trying to move too quickly. I can't really say a lot more about the ending there, except I guess that she says,
Well, I
and I
think it's
mean.
yeah. I think what you were saying about how like you weren't worried about them saying, "Oh, it's too religious. We have to take it out." I think I've been saying this has been a pretty big. We've been talking about this for a really long time. So this is a huge sigh of relief that it's going to be there. I've been saying for a while that I didn't think the exact line would be there, but I figured the idea itself would be. Like, I'm surprised, you know, it's Tyrion, it was Tyrion who reported that, you know, the exact line, "There I have another name," is going to be in the film. Yeah, I didn't necessarily think that that exact words were being there, but I thought the idea would. And so this isn't so this is obviously a huge relief. Now that doesn't mean they've got it right. You know, we should start celebrating now. You know, we still got to see it and see how it comes across.
Sure.
It's really important in the book because you get across that it's kind of a you know, without that, it's a really sad ending. You're not coming back to Narnia. See you later. You're done.
Yeah.
Whereas this makes it a little more hopeful. Of you know, no, yeah, it Dawn Treader, it is still kind of a sad ending, but there's a hope to it at the same time that you can still continue to know me in your world. And like Lucy says, it's not never coming back to Narnia that's so heartbreaking. It's not meeting Aslan that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's saying, no, that's you're still going to be able to know me. And Aslan's pretty – Aslan rarely gives a lot of details about what he's doing and why. It's what makes him such a really wonderfully interesting character. So that's consistent with it. But again, in order to get a slight sense of – not exactly to be continued – but sort of a sense of this is not the end, a much more hopeful ending. It's crucial to have that concept. So this is definitely a really important piece, and I'm really relieved they're going to have it in there.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought of it that way because it really gives a point. Because he says, oh, wait, maybe that was in the Silver Chair. That is why you were brought – I guess it's in the Silver Chair. He says that is why you were brought to – No. He says it in Voyage
of
Dawn Treader. That is why you were brought here. He says, that is why you were brought here, that by knowing me a little here, you would know me better there.
Yeah.
And I think that interaction is so important because otherwise it's sort of a pointless hurrah. You know, well, I brought you into this place, and yes, you grew up here and you were kings and queens, and you did some good. But see ya, they don't even remember you anymore, you know?
That's ultimately consistent with what Adamson has tried to do with the first two movies, which is at the beginning establishing these issues that they're going through. Then they go through this journey and that, you know, they resolve some of these personal issues they're having. You know, they basically grow up through Narnia.
Right.
And this would be consistent as far as, no, it's not just I brought to Narnia for fun. It's because there were things in your life that needed to be worked out.
Yeah.
So this is kind of different, but consistent with that idea.
And that's an excellent transitioning, I think, into the undragoning.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I talked to each other the day on the phone. I think you called me or I called you as I was leaving my office. I'll just read it here. Keller says she learned that did they actually see this scene?
I think they saw storyboards of it is what it was.
Okay. Kella says she learned that the writers originally wanted Eustace still in dragon form to fight a sea monster and earn his return to human form, but she says Flaherty, a committed Christian, put them straight that you don't earn grace, you receive it once you are humbled and aware of your need. So they're going to keep the undragoning there.
And pretty much how it is. It's encouraging that, yeah, thematically they're getting the right idea. Like, certainly, like when I first read that about the whole idea of Eustace having to earn back his humanity by fighting the sea serpent, that made me cringe because, like, that's wrong. The whole point is that Eustace, who's been this stuck-up, prideful, self-centered know-it-all for the entire book, has to lie down and admit that he's powerless and he can't do it. That's what makes the transition so powerful. Yeah. So to have him do something heroic to earn it back would be completely off track. So it's nice to know that – that doesn't mean they'll get it that doesn't mean that it will come across in the film. But it's nice to know that they at least know thematically where they should be trying to go and that they seem like they're on the right track.
And I think I told you right now I am cautiously optimistic, and the cautious – caveat is there because it's a question of, well, can they transport that scene from the book to film? Because it works very, very well in the book, but I'm not sure how I would do it for the film. Whereas if I had heard otherwise, well, they're going to translate it differently. I would be cautiously pessimistic by saying, well, yes, that would be difficult to translate, so I understand them wanting to do something else, but what on earth are they going to do? You know, that would be the question.
That's a really
good
point as far as how I would feel about the news. I totally agree. And it is a really difficult scene. I had always assumed and even thought it would be a good idea to change the specifics of how Eustace is changed, you know, where Aslan ripping off his skin and stuff. Even in the book, it's a pretty bizarre scene, but I think it works because Lewis gives it this wonderful dreamlike quality. Even Eustace himself isn't sure after it's done whether or not it was real, and Edmund says, "Yeah, I think it was." But it's the imagery is beautiful. But you know, it's one thing to say that in a book and to say that it happened. It's another thing to actually visualize a lion ripping multiple layers of skin off of a dragon. It's and throwing him into a lake. It's really weird, kind of like Aslan holding a sword in *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe* when he knights Peter. Right. You know, that was never going to work to visualize. But you know, Tyrion has said that we're actually going to see Aslan ripping the skin off of Dragon Eustace's body, which. Again, I guess it's nice that they're if they can find a way to do that and make it work, hey, I'd love to be proven wrong if they can find a way to do that. But right now it's like, man, is that just going to be too bizarre for film? Is the meaning of it going to be lost? It's not in the book. The meaning's not lost because you're just reading it. But when you're seeing it, is the meaning behind it, the power of it going to be lost by the bizarreness of it on film? That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, I think that's a fair concern. I think part of it you mentioned that will be key is keeping what you call the dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
And I think if they, even subconsciously, you know, if people are watching a scene in the movie and they realize, oh, it's a dream, there's a lot of things you can do that just you kind of think, oh, yeah, okay, I see. I wonder what this means rather than what's happening, you see. Because I've seen some dreams in movies that are, or television shows that were done where they're really, really weird. But because it's a dream, you're trying to think, I wonder what this symbolizes or wonder what this is trying to say, you know?
I think you're on the right track there, keeping that dreamlike quality. So I think they were really good at doing that. Because in the scene in the Prince Caspian book when Lucy is trying to wake up the trees, that's actually not a dream, but it has a very dreamlike quality to it. In the movie, they actually made it a dream, which I think from a filmmaking perspective gave them license to kind of do some things you might not normally be able to do. Hopefully they can people should be focusing on what does this mean for the character, not just, oh, my gosh, they're ripping off his skin. But, you know, there's just no denying the fact that it is weird, you know, even in the book, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, well, this is going to be something I think I'm probably most curious about. Perhaps this scene than many other scene. Well, okay, this is the second most curious scene I'm eager to see next to the Dark Island.
Yeah. Dark Island is another example of something that's going to be really hard to visualize.
Because I thought there were a few moments with the old BBC movies I did kind of like, but this was one I thought... Yeah, it just doesn't work this way. You have to do it differently, you know?
Yeah.
So far we've been encouraged by what we've read about the plot.
Yeah, as far as Don Treader, yes.
Don Treader, right. Don Treader. So now comes to the next portion, which we think is probably the best explanation for the unfathomable fate we heard about last year.
Mm-hmm. It's still kind of incomplete, but this is hints at it at least.
Yeah, and I'll just see how they put it down. The article says, and this, again, big spoiler, folks. Keller says, "I was less than enthusiastic about the imposition of an invented quest to recover the seven swords of the seven lords to undo some evil magic of a new witch. It is a fairly innocuous addition, but as a purist, I would be happier without it." And just a side note, there is no new witch. That is a typo or a mistake on Christianity Today's part. But,
Yeah, let's really emphasize that, by the way. All our theory is about the Lady of the Green Kirtle who appeared
in a leaked script,
she's not going to be in there. You know, thank God for that.
But that does beg the question, where does this, you know, so what about the swords? Why are the swords so important? What's going to, is there some spell that...
Something that's Narnia is, some kind of magical spell that Narnia is under, maybe as a result of something Niraz did. And Caspian has to go try to undo that, and finding their swords is a part of that. You know, maybe it's kind of like, you know, those stories about like trying to find like keys and stuff, and a lot of mythology and stories, and we have to find these seven swords, and I don't know. Presumably, that's the seven swords. Finding them is a key to saving Narnia from whatever this unfathomable fate thing is. And so I don't know. Again, this is incomplete. This is just a little piece of it, but it's the
You're
best
not expecting
hint
to see
we've
Tilda
gotten.
Swinton in Voyage of the Dawn Treader?
What's that?
You're not expecting to see Tilda Swinton in Voyage of the Dawn Treader?
Oh, I hope not, man. I don't even want to talk about that and jinx it. I think we should move on now.
But really, I mean, when I first read this, I was still. I think you and I had some of the similar thoughts on this. I thought to myself, okay, it sounds like, especially from the way this person said it, that it's going to be an annoyance. Okay, it's not a huge, overbearing new trajectory for the film. It's something extra that was added, and it's kind of an annoyance. But I think it can either be really big or really small. Sure, it could be somewhere in the middle. It's kind of a forced dichotomy. But let's say if it's small, then you have the problem of, well, why even put it in there? It seems so odd. I think even if the film's done well, even a person who's never read the books could, if you could come up to them and say, okay, do you think that quest about the Seven Lords was really necessary to propel the story? They might say, no, it really isn't. I could definitely see that happening. But if they make it big enough to actually be a big deal, then they're going to have to, what else are they going to have to change?
Yeah, then you can't decide if that's better or worse.
Yeah, it seems, you know, if it's so small that it's just an annoyance, like, oh, it's not that big a deal, guys, don't worry about it. Then why put it in?
What's really, the point? It's totally unnecessary.
Yeah, if it does serve, so I'm thinking, what purpose does it serve? And if it does serve a big purpose, I'm thinking, why are you adding something so huge to serve a whole new purpose?
Well, the purpose, I think, you know, if we try to keep in mind what we've been hearing about them the past several months, you know, that we've heard several times about them wanting to make it, or it's been hinted that they want to make the journey about more than just the Seven Lords, that's mm-hmm. not compelling enough or not big enough or epic enough or whatever. And so there needs to be so presumably what they want to do is make it so that finding the Seven Lords is an important part of saving Narnia from something. And so I guess they decided that, well, there maybe what if the Seven Lords have something that they need, and that's why they have to go find them. So I think that's kind of the thought process that's going on here. And they said, well, let's do something. Yeah. We're not going to do like their rings or something, because that's been taken. we'll do swords. That'll be kind of cool. So I think that's kind of the process here. And, you know, depending on how it's done, could be good, could be bad. We just don't have enough information at this point. But that's certainly not going to stop us from speculating.
You made a very good point on the phone that I had not considered that point about what this changes as far as Caspian's character.
Mm-hmm. As far as in the book, or this could change it. I've had some more thoughts on it since. But my initial concern was that the reasons Caspian sets out on the voyage, I think that it's sort of a continuation of the ending of Prince Caspian, and the ending of Prince Caspian is very much about righting the wrongs that the Telmarines have been committed. You know, one of the important themes, what was wronged has been set right again. So after Caspian is crowned, you know, he promises, I'll search for a year and a day to find the Seven Lords that my uncle banished. It's all just a continuation of him wanting to right the wrongs that his uncle committed. And he must, as a Telmarine, must feel a certain sense of responsibility that it was my people that did all this scenario. Now I've got to fix it. So I think that's Caspian's main intention, on paper at least. There's that whole other element of wanting to sail to the world's end and all. But on paper, that's his reason. And if you have the Seven Swords thing, and it's all about saving Narnia, well, it's like, well, now it's not out of a sense of personal responsibility anymore that he's doing it. Now he's doing it because he has to save Narnia from something.
Yeah. I think it changes it. It makes it sound like now it's about, the quest is about survival.
Yeah.
And not the adventure and the honor. That is in the that you capture in the book, especially with Reepicheep's character. Reepicheep's character, he's not going on a voyage for survival's sake.
Right.
He's not going to avoid some unfathomable fate. You know, Reepicheep, he's going to find an unfathomable fate in a sense.
Yeah. If anything, Reepicheep is almost going to lose his life. He throws his sword away at the end. He throws away everything he believes in at the end to go to Aslan's country in a way. Reepicheep is the opposite of survival is what he's going for.
Yeah, so that's something I just think, if it's small, okay, it'll be my pet peeve for the film. I hope that this is the only pet peeve. But if not, I'm thinking, you know, Well, how significant is it going to be? We don't know at this point.
Yeah. I guess one other thought I've had is, what if Miraz, if they're trying to save Narnia from some magic or something that's going to destroy Narnia or whatever, what if somehow Miraz or something the Telmarines did was the cause of that magic? And so now, in order to right that wrong, Caspian has to find the lords and find their swords to reverse it. So it could still be,
Yeah,
that
yes.
idea of Caspian wanting to right those wrongs. But it even then, it wouldn't quite be the same sense of I have to do this because out of responsibility that my people did this. Now I've got to try to fix it. But again, we're obviously missing a piece here. And I guess my main concern is it just sounds like they're missing the point that the reason for the journey is not actually the Seven Lords. On paper, it is that sort of. But I really
Right.
think that thematically, they all want to go east. There's this longing they all have to
Yeah.
find Aslan's country and this wonderful sense of adventure. And Reepicheep has had this longing his whole life to go east. The Seven Lords provide the perfect excuse to do so. The main theme of the story is a longing for one's true home, and ultimately the joy of finding it, and the feeling there's got to be something else out there of lasting value. So, even though this might seem like a minor change story-wise, it seems like it could be a big change thematically. So, I keep getting the sense that they don't get it; they're missing the point of the story.
My big question will be, is this something where I can do an edited version for myself and just cut it out or
Like Star Wars, The Phantom Edit.
Yeah, I've always wanted
The
to see
fan
that,
version of
honestly.
it.
Was it, did you see it? The
Yeah.
Phantom Edit? Was it any good? Was it
I never
better?
saw it. I've heard about it, though.
Oh, I've actually heard from
I've
people
heard
that
it's been a little better.
I heard it does make it noticeably better. Not and it's not an amazing film, but I've heard it is better.
Yeah.
Well,
Voyage of the
so
Dawn
overall
Treader,
I'm
the Narnia Web edit.
well,
Okay.
overall I feel I'm really encouraged. Certainly this is certainly a much better bundle of news than what followed Eddie Izzard's departure.
Yeah, definitely. We certainly have to say that. Obviously, because this is the podcast, we're gonna tend to focus on the negative stuff because that's where all the controversy is. But everyone, even the people that had these issues, even the people who didn't like Wardrobe or Caspian, were very encouraged by what they saw, and really felt like, oh, they're getting the franchise back on track. So
Well,
I guess
especially from
overall, we
where I
should be
was,
encouraged by this.
I guess especially from where I was, well, I guess 2 years ago, we were talking about, oh my goodness, we were talking about another witch. I mean, you weren't
Yeah.
really concerned, but I mean, some people were concerned they were even toying around with the idea. We were concerned about Trump, a little bit concerned about Trumpkin doing being a part of the crew. So I think in comparison from where the concerns I've had, I'm in a much better spot.
That's a very good point. I think for me, the past several months have just been I've just been in no man's land as far as I have no idea how I feel at all. This could be the best thing ever. It could be the worst thing ever, for all I know. And I think I'm definitely starting to feel like I have a better sense. Like a few months ago, someone asked a friend of mine, "So how do you feel about the next Narnia movie?" And I really didn't know what to tell him. Like, well, here's what we know, and I don't know what direction they're going to go. And someone else asked me recently, and I was actually able to talk for a few minutes about how I feel about it. So. I'm definitely getting a better sense, and overall, certainly feel better despite some issues. And there will always be some issues, no matter how good it is, you know?
Right. Well, I feel I'm feeling better. I'm trying to remember where I felt before. That's why I think it's kind of cool that you can go back to your video blogs from Prince Caspian and see, okay, how did I feel at this point this many months before the movie came out? Which I'm just trying to remember, like Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Where did I feel? I think for Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I had very high expectations, and then for Prince Caspian, they were a little bit more. I was a little bit more involved in what controversies were going on.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the only other piece of news, really, just to kind of wrap it up, and there's not a lot of discussion. Everyone, well, I guess. Oh, real briefly, I guess we didn't talk about people's perceptions of the Seven Swords. The vibe I'm getting is that people see it as an annoyance. They're not
Yeah,
enraged
I
about
don't
it.
think that Narnia ever. It's kind of like what Keller was saying. It's like it's not that it. Oh, this is terrible. The movie's gonna be awful because of this. So people are kind of, yeah, it'd be better without it. But I definitely don't think that. Actually, Narnia Webbers are reacting to it. They're not being as negative as I thought they might be.
Yeah.
And I think some people, there's even some people out there think, oh, this might be actually kind of cool, you know. But again, there's just not enough information to know for sure right now.
Yeah. Well, and then I guess the other, only other thing to, I was going to mention was that now we've heard that the Voyage of the Dawn Treader is going to be released anyway in 3D, which I guess we both agree certainly makes a good is a good business decision.
With Avatar recently becoming the highest grossing film of all time, a big part of that being from 3D sales. Yeah, and I guess the fact that it's coming after Avatar just makes you think, okay, this probably isn't an if they're just making this decision, you know, months after Avatar is a huge hit, this probably is not an artistic decision. It's a purely commercial decision, and that's the reason why I'm going to go see the 2D version first, because I think that's the movie. As long as this doesn't affect the 2D version of the movie, like, because there could still be time to change some visual effects shots and throw more things at the screen and all that stuff. As long as this doesn't affect the 2D version of all, does not affect the 2D version at all, I guess I'll be okay with it. But to me, because Michael Apted was not shooting for 3D, the 2D version will be the movie.
That's how Michael Apted made,
and the 3D version will be a distorted version of the movie.
Because that's, I mean, okay, I have not seen Alice in Wonderland in 3D, but I think it was not filmed in 3D also.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But personally, I thought the 3D in Avatar was never distracting. I thought it was just, you know, a part of the movie, and I didn't feel like it. You know,
brilliant.
Yeah, I never found it distracting.
Yeah, it was like what some people said. You know, James Cameron uses 3D like some directors use lighting. You know, it's just not a way to throw stuff at the screen. It's a way to It fundamentally affected his choice of composition. But again, Avatar was conceived from the ground up to not only be in 3D, but to be a different kind of 3D. So whereas this is, okay, the movie's, you know, we've shot the movie, and now, oh, Avatar was a big hit, we got to convert this to 3D. You know, so it's a purely commercial decision, as opposed to Avatar, where it was more of an artistic decision from the very beginning.
I've told people, I said, 3D should be to 2D what color was to black and white. Yes, it is going to affect you artistically to some extent. There are some things you do in a color film that you would never even try to do in a black and white because, well, that dimension isn't there. But it's not it's not like everyone's intentionally got a rainbow in every single shot. That's how I think – that's how I want to see 3D used. And that's why – and actually, I also saw the movie Up in 2D and in 3D in theaters.
Now that it was excellent in 3D.
It was very good in 3D, and it didn't feel like a gimmick. But again, here's where I'm – but again, that's a digital film where – there's no problem trying to – I feel like I'll probably see it, the Voyage of the Dawn Treader in 3D maybe once. But because, again, it's kind of ported, I just don't think it'll feel right. I think it'll feel –
I think even if they did discover some new technology where they really could make the 3D look just as good as Avatar even though it wasn't shot that way – even if they did that, I still would be opposed to it because this is not the movie that Michael Apted made. This is a movie that some marketing execs are making.
Yeah.
And so, again, I would call it a distortion of Michael Apted's vision.
So I'll probably see both, but I am actually – and I would have – I said from the beginning, if they had decided to use 3D cameras, my original first hesitation against that was, oh, great. They might make it into a gimmick. If they had just, you know – okay, we're just going to, you know, tell a story. We're not going to be throwing things at the camera. We're not going to have a person sticking his spear right into
the... They could still do that, though. They're still right in the middle of post-production. There's plenty of time to... Can we add a little more water coming into the screen there? I mean, there's all kinds of things they could still do.
That's true, but I guess I just I'll probably end up enjoying the 2D version more. I don't know. I almost wish I had seen Alice in 3D as well. Because it's weird because there were some scenes where I thought to myself, that would have been really obnoxious in 3D. But then there were moments where I thought, this is really obnoxious in 2D. With Alice in Wonderland, I generally liked the movie, but I just thought, this just feels, it's just too inconsistent. You know, but at least this feels like it was made, I think this will feel like more of a classic film. And if they can add the 3D effect, do it well, and it not be obnoxious, so much the better. It's another option for people to see if they want. I think one person was pointing out
Narnie Webbers are feeling
they're not going to
Sorry?
lose any money, except from maybe a production standpoint of converting it over. They're not going to lose money at the theaters from having
Yeah,
it in 3D.
I think commercially this is a good decision. You know, it's just artistically, is it a good one? I think Narnia lovers are generally feeling okay about it. I mean, especially there is a choice, you know, and that's why I said, hey, as long as the 3D is not going to affect how they do the 2D version at all, like more stuff flying at the screen, I'll be okay with it. In Narnia lovers, if you look on the current homepage poll, I asked Narnia lovers to rate this decision on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 meaning great, 3 meaning okay, and 1 meaning bad. And right now, 31% just say it's okay, and 29% say great. So you have 31% voted 3, okay, and 29% voted for 5, great. So I think people are generally positive about it. And then there's a small handful that are just like, you know, think it's awesome, and a small handful that think it's going to be bad. But again, like my issue, we have a choice, 2D or 3D, as long as 3D doesn't affect the 2D version at all, even though seeing on a poster, The Chronicles of Narnia in 3D, you know, even that kind of makes me cringe.
Yeah.
I guess that'll be a minor quibble as long as the 3D doesn't affect the 2D.
Yeah. Sometimes I do dislike I dislike having that sometimes. Just, you know, I can just imagine Russell Crowe is Robin Hood in digital 3D. You know? Oh, great. You know, now those arrow shots take on a whole new meaning.
Right.
But I don't know. My guess is, as far as 3D, I'll probably see it once in the 3D, and then I'll probably see it the rest of the times in 2D. That's my guess.
Now, I'm sure I'll see it the first time in 2D, and then if I like the movie, one of my repeat viewings will be in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've been going for a little longer, but that's okay. I thought we had a good pace.
Yeah.
But
overall, you know, like
there's
some
good
minor issues here. For me, the 3D would be one of those minor issues. Mm-hmm. Overall, I do feel a lot more encouraged about Dawn Treader, for sure.
Agreed. Very much agreed.
All right, hopefully I'll feel the same way after a trailer.
Hopefully. I want to see. You know what I'm really curious to see about with the trailer? Almost more than just the footage. How are they going to market this film? How are they?
Is it an action film? Is it Pirates of the Caribbean 4? Like, where are they going to go with it?
No. Hey, Prince of Persia is Pirates of the Caribbean 4. Because because it's getting progressively cheesy and lame. So, that can be the Pirates of the Caribbean 4. This is going to be C.S. Lewis's voice.
I'd be okay with that.
Well, this was fun, Glumfiddle. Thank you very much.
All right. Further up and further in.